This is Nick.
And I'm Ryan.
This week we're covering Playdate news,
recent indie releases,
and in the path of totality, talking about Playdate games. That didn't work as well as I hoped, but here we are.
It was close. Thank you so much for listening. Let's get started.
Let's get started indeed. Folks, did you see the eclipse?
Us folks or the folks at home that answering the podcast right now?
No, you folks. You folks.
Us folks. We were at like 80% here, so it looked really cloudy for a couple of hours, even though it was not cloudy outside.
Nicholas?
About the same over here.
Okay. My family and I got to see it. This is the first time I've ever seen a total eclipse, and my gosh, it was quite memorable.
Pretty cool.
I don't know if this fits into the podcast at all, but I'm fresh back less than 24 hours ago, so it's on my mind.
Play your play date during the totality?
No, I was trying to think if there was some sort of a eclipse themed game that I might be able to photograph, but no, I didn't take any products with me to photograph for the eclipse. I just sort of enjoyed it and very glad I did. And my 10-year-old son got to see it, 34 years before I ever did. So that was neat to share with him. Yeah, it was incredible.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I think our longtime listener, Ian Harrower, said it best. I saw some post of his saying, like, people who didn't see the eclipse don't want to hear about it, and people who saw it have stories of their own. So I guess I'll stop talking about it now. But it was fantastic. I hope everybody listening is able to see a total eclipse at some point. Get into that path of totality. It's totality or bust, for real.
Watch the NASA live stream on YouTube. I had that going, and it was interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. And there is actually a Playdate game that coincides with the Eclipse stuff. So we'll get to that in a little bit.
Is that right? Is Cranky Eclipse coming out now?
No. Well, it might be, but I don't know about that one. There is another game, though.
Okay. I'll wait with bated breath until the indie inventory. But until then, we should get started with our boop news and notes for this episode. Let's see here. Starting off with, oh, my land, guys. Not great news. Did you hear that $400,000 worth of playdates were stolen?
Yeah. How many playdates is that, I wonder?
I did the calculations, and it ends up being 2,000 playdates. They did not say a specified number of playdates, but, you know, divide 400,000 by 200, you know, the retail price of the playdate, and you come up with 2,000 playdates. So it sounds like, you know, a pallet or so was absconded with, went missing. And we've got a link to the article talking about this in the show notes for today's episode. And it sounds like Cable was in characteristically Cable good spirits about the whole thing. He was talking about it at, it was some conference. I forget what. Again, linked in the show notes for today's episode. But I guess they were on the track of figuring out where it was. Some sort of shipping mishap, but hopefully those turn up, and who knows, maybe they already have by now. I haven't really followed up to since this came to light a week and a half ago or so. Anyhow, wanted to let folks know about that if you haven't heard about it, and wish Panic all the luck finding those playdates.
I think I saw on Reddit or on Discord that some were being registered in North Las Vegas. You register your system and you sign up for your gamer tag and whatnot. Some were showing up in North Vegas, and I think they are able to track the serial numbers when you log on. But if you're just Joe Schmo, you buy one off eBay, like, you're not really committing a crime by buying a playdate. So I don't know if they brick them remotely, if that's the way to go, or hopefully just insurance takes care of it. But we do have an insurance expert here. I don't know.
Nick, you want to chime in on this with an expert opinion?
As far as legality, I don't think it's legal to own stolen property, even if you weren't an accessory to the crime or, directly related to it. So not sure how this will shake out, but it is interesting. As far as insurance goes, this is shipping related, so it all depends on if it happened after it was unloaded, if the bill of lading was signed, all those kind of things, and how it was actually packaged and put together. There's a lot of factors depending on that, and I am certain that they've been talking to their adjuster, and that's the correct course of action.
Don, interesting that you should bring up some of them were turning up in North Las Vegas, because I think that's around where they were last tracked. Again, it's been a little bit since I read this article, but check it out, and hopefully Panic can figure out this mess. Sorry you're dealing with that, Panic. That is a bummer. Sort of for ironic, sure, because, you know, Cable just came out a few weeks ago saying, rah, rah, sis, boom, bah, you can buy a play date and get it now, barring any unforeseen circumstances. Right. Now we've got this. I think they're still shipping them as people buy them, but I haven't heard anything otherwise. But this is really a bummer of a wrinkle. But
why don't find like a new shipper? Because it says here that they were the same pallet or another set of pallets was just delivered to a construction site next to a Circle K next door to the shipping center.
I think that was the same one. I think that was the same one that went missing. Later. Really?
Yeah.
Because I read in that same article that the one that went missing was reported at a Circle K or something. Anyway,
somebody grabbed the ones by the Circle K and took them over to the shipping center.
Okay.
So maybe those were later stolen, but it sounds like this was after the stolen ones.
Huh.
Anyway, what the hell is going on in Vegas?
All right. Come on, Vegas. Help Panic out.
Get it together.
All right. The next news and note is a bit of a follow-up from our previous episode. Last episode, we had a Ryan chosen pick of the week, and I received some correspondence with the Water Flow developer who said that the new speed function is implemented. I don't know if you remember this, but there was some wackiness to do with the water speed as we were playing the game. Basically, it was crank oriented, crank it forward to speed it up, back to slow it down, or vice versa. But now there is a press B or use the crank for adjusting the speed. So basically, there's a standard speed, press B, it speeds up, press B again, it speeds up even more. And then if you press B a third time, then it goes back to that standard speed. You've also got some visual feedback for the speed. So prior to this update, the crank mechanism, you basically just had to watch your water flow and it would flow faster if you cranked it up. But sometimes it would just automatically crank back down or crank up to real fast. And now you have some visual feedback on the left-hand side of the screen where there's like three hollow dots. And if you press B, you know, those dots start to fill up and the speed starts to increase on the water flow. So I thought all that was really fantastic that he incorporated B, incorporated visual feedback, and kept that crank mechanic for people who enjoyed it. Yeah, nice work on that. So
I really like the crank mechanic, so I'm glad that that stayed.
Of course you do, because I did not.
We have to hold opposite opinions about everything.
Ryan, it looks like your score is slipping on the leaderboard here.
That's not part of the news and notes, Don. Ooh. But Nick, the only reason I didn't like it was because whenever I used the crank, it was not consistent for me. Like I'd crank it up to keep it going fast.
This really sounds like a Ryan problem. That's what I'm hearing.
I don't know. This sounds like software to me. But anyway, let's move past the software difficulty and Ryan's score slipping and move on to the next news and note, which is the fact that one of our games of the year for 2023, I think it was it my top game? It might have been my number one game. Yeah. Fall of Elena Temple is the game we're talking about. This is being ported to virtually everything. Evidently, it's going to be on Switch this month, like in April. Then there's going to be Fall of Elena Temple available on Steam. Evidently, there is a demo available right now, but it's going to be available for realsies in June. It's also going to be on Xbox and PS5 sometime between now and June. I saw this on the tweeters, and once again, we will have a link in the show notes for today's episode if you'd like to take a look at that. But essentially, if you want Fall of Elena Temple in every corner of your life, it's happening. So wanted to let you know about that. Thoughts on Fall of Elena Everywhere, guys.
Load your eShop bucks now. Yeah, it looks similar to, I think, Elena Temple, the first one, kind of had like a fake Apple II looking screen when you would play it on an Xbox or whatever. This one has sort of a fake looking Playdate screen in somebody's bedroom, and you play on a little Playdate. It's pretty cool.
That maybe after cool. they put out the Switch version and put it on Steam, they'll have a fake Switch screen on there for everybody.
Too advanced, too modern. But yeah, that's pretty exciting. That's very cool.
Yeah, I thought so too. Cool. We can check it out.
Very cool. Congrats.
Yes, indeed. You can check that out in the show notes. And the next news and note is the fact that Shift 2 from Scenic Route Software hits iPhone. So once again, you can play some of these Playdate games in more locations than just your Playdate, if that's what you fancy. But Scenic Route Software, congrats on shifting that over to iPhone as well. Probably pretty easy for a Swifty like Mr. Route to port that over to iPhone. But yeah, very cool that that's available there too.
It plays a little bit different, but not too different. Like, the rules are still the same, but there's no crank, obviously. So if you want to go up and down on, if you want to raise or lower the tiles, the power of the tiles, you kind of hold it for a second and then you swipe up or swipe down. But it works pretty well when you get into the rhythm of it. And it's got a couple palette swaps, got music, lots of features, lots of options, and it's still got leaderboards and whatnot. So it's pretty fun. Check it out.
Very cool. Don, I have a question for you that only has one right answer on this podcast. Would you rather play Switch 2 on iPhone or Playdate?
I mean, I prefer the Playdate. Even when I started playing Shift 2 on my phone, or no, when I started playing Shift 2 on the Playdate, I was like, oh, I love these new modes. And I had forgotten they were in Shift on the iPhone. Because I hadn't played Shift on the iPhone that much. I always just played on the Playdate. So it's not a nice option, though. If you don't have your Playdate yet, then definitely give it a shot. And it is nice to have it in my pocket when I don't have my Playdate. I have been playing it at the doctor's office and stuff when I don't have my Playdate. So very cool.
True, true. And now it can be played at night as well.
That's true, too. I have been playing it in the dark. A good Ryan app right there. I don't know if it's coming, if he's going to port it to Android or not. You'll have to grill him and find out. I don't know.
I have a feeling not. He's an iPhone guy,
He's
right?
He's an iPhone guy, yeah. So
yeah. Probably not. Yeah. Oh, well.
I wish.
I guess I'll have to keep playing Shift in the daylight hours. But until then.
Me too.
I think Don has a news and note for us.
Yeah. I was looking up one of the indie inventory games today, and I stumbled upon a website that I feel like I should have known about for a long time. It's playdateunofficial.com. I don't know how I never heard of this. We follow the webmaster on Twitter. So anyway, it's like an unofficial Playdate website. It's just a fan site. It's really, really slick. Like, whoever did this website we need to hire him to do our podcast website. But it's got reviews of games, and it's got different articles and whatnot. It looks like it's just like a sales site for the Playdate, because it's so Playdate positive, but there's a lot of like little cool articles and stuff on here. And again, it's just super, super slick. So I highly recommend checking it out. There's not a ton of content in there, but everything in here is really high quality, and it's really fun just to navigate and look at all the pictures. And they put their top games of 2023 on here, top Playdate games. So really fun. There'll be a link in the show notes, but you got to check out playdateunofficial.com. How do we miss this?
Would you put this in the news and notes? I was honestly a little confused because it's so Playdate branded. It looks like it was done by Panic.
It does, yeah.
So I'm sure he's taking lots of cues from the official Playdate site, and the fact that he was essentially selling this thing, like, you know, really hyping the Playdate as if he were Panic. I'm like, is this an advertisement site? And if so, why is there a second one? But there are articles about the game. which I think are pretty handy. He says, this is where I write about Playdate things that are not reviews and impressions of the game I've played. It's how-tos, game of the year lists, interviews, peripherals, previews, overall things I think about. And the person who is putting this together is another Nick. His name is Nick, aka The Game Llama and Indie Retropod on Twitter. So evidently he's also a co-host of Indie and Retro Podcast. Real Nick, were you saying that you were listening to that podcast at one point?
I don't think I've heard that one, no.
I thought you were saying you were listening to one that occasionally mentions Playdate stuff. I thought maybe that was it.
There's a few of them that I listen to that that mention it, but not this specific one. So I might have to check this out, especially with a host with the great name like Nick.
speaking of which, Gaming in the Wild brought he received a Playdate for review a couple weeks ago, and he did an episode where he talked about the Playdate for 10 minutes or so, gave a little background. If I remember, I will put a link in the show notes. It's one of my favorite podcasts, and he usually talks about indie games, but it's pretty short and very, very well done. So check out that episode and give him a subscribe. But Ryan, there's a whole article in here just on Snake Games for the Playdate.
Oh, wee. I like that.
Yeah.
Very cool. But hey, you know, after 50 episodes, you'd think we'd get a review Playdate. Maybe after we hit 100, we'll receive ours. But anyway, how's about we move on to bitty boop boop in the inventory for this show? Don, what you got for us today?
Rate and review all of these games, 10 stars only. Hop on there. We've got a curveball at first. There are not as many games as usual. I cut the list back to the bone, but the first game is a demo, and normally I would not put demos on here.
That's right.
Oh, but I played this demo, and it was so much fun. I got to make sure everybody checks this out. Huh. It is called Icy Dungeon. It is by DRD Dev, and there's only 15 levels. It's like a little puzzle game. Where you're a little dude running around a dungeon, and there's ice. Like wherever you walk, the ice cracks, and then when you go to walk past it again, when you backtrack, you slide. So you have to kind of build that in. It reminds me a little bit of the way you kick bombs in Bomberman, how they slide across the screen. And there's a iOS game that's really similar and also very good, and I will have to look up what it is called because I don't know off the top of my head. But anyway, it seems like there's some kind of little story here. You can see one of the gifts. You're standing in the middle of a little circle, like an altar of sacrifice or something. So there's something cool going on here. I would just recommend the demo is free. Hop on and check it out. The game is coming soon. Really, really fun.
This does look really cool. The game mechanic of potentially breaking through the ice reminded me a little bit of those occasional squares in Under the Castle where you can like walk on them once, and if you hop over them again, you drop down to the next level. I don't know if there's any similarity or not, but
I don't know if that mechanic was in here yet, but it's more like you just keep sliding past what you want to get to. If you go in the wrong direction and you don't crack the ice in the right pattern, you'll just keep sliding past it.
Interesting.
So you have to slide to like a dry spot in the right order.
Okay. This sounds like a very cool puzzle platformer. I just downloaded it as you were speaking. So can't wait to try this out.
Right on. Next up, we have Bob Invasion by Rob Games. And to be honest, the name doesn't do a lot for me, but it looks really fun. It's $1. There are little aliens invading the planet. And it looks like a nice little cute adventure. I watched the video and it kind of reminded me of Gauntlet. Huh. Not as frantic as Gauntlet, like not with hundreds and hundreds of enemies, but a similar type of play style where you push something to get through and then enemies come at you, aliens come at you. But it's got some story behind it as well. More story than Gauntlet did.
Well, that's interesting. You said the right word for me. I've got warm fuzzies about Gauntlet, so maybe I'll give this a try.
How do we not have more Gauntlet games yet?
For real. Exactly. Well, maybe because we can't use a link cable with the Playdate yet.
Make it happen. I feel like you guys can make it happen. Anyway, that's a Bob Invasion.
There's a USB-C port on the bottom of the Playdate.
There you go. Smart people.
Maybe it can be used for communication.
Yeah, maybe we could, make a four-way USB splitter, right? Four-way?
Yes. Nodding
that
my
we could,
head, yes.
That we could program F1 racing so that we could all race each other.
It's got Wi-Fi. Can't we play online or something?
That was the only four-player Game Boy game, right? F1 racing? Am I remembering that correctly? So.
That was the one with the pack-in, but I think there might have been others as well.
I'm not sure. Maybe there
North
was
America?
One.
I don't know.
You're the expert, Ryan.
That's true.
Here I thought I was an expert. I don't think they made many four-player games. If they did, maybe two. Anyway,
a handheld gaming video game podcaster today.
I'll eagerly await someone to prove me wrong in our Discord. Don, this is a perfect chance to plug our Discord.
On Discord to ask Ryan, who hosted a portable video game podcast.
You all, guess what? I just searched this, and it turns out that Gauntlet 2 supports the four-player adapter, as well as Tetris.
Wow.
Tetris?
Yeah. That's what it says.
Which Tetris?
I'm curious if it means Game Boy Advance or original Game Boy.
I think you're looking at a wacky site there, Mr. Baldridge.
Did the Game Boy Advance use the original link cable?
I don't think so.
It used its own link cable.
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, you know what would be good?
Is to do this off air.
To stop talking about the Game Boy.
Oh, hey, I found a better list.
Oh, God.
F1 Race, Top Rank Tennis, Wario Blast featuring Bomberman, Wave Race, and Yoshi's Cookie.
There five. Okay.
Thank you. Wave Race does ring a bell.
Thank you. I was three off. I thought there were two. Okay. Thank you, Nick.
Everyone, check out Nick's Virtual Boy podcast, Gaming in
Virtuality.
Virtually
Human.
Human. Thank you. There'll be a link in the show notes. And Ryan's portable video game podcast. Gaming cast, right?
That's right. Yep. You named it, Don.
It's not fishing themed. It is video game themed. Anyway, check those out. But while you're checking those out, check out Touch Egg by Joel Stuff. This one, you have a hand pointing at an egg that says don't touch. And as you crank, your finger gets longer and longer and you start poking the egg. And there's like an old man in front of you. And if you poke it as many times as possible, but eventually he kind of wakes up. And if he catches you, your finger goes away. So it's kind of like that game in Wario mode where mom would try and catch you playing your Game Gear under the Game Boy under the covers. You have 60 seconds to touch it as much as possible.
So this is similar to Super Corporate Tax Avoider, huh?
A little bit, yes.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
How could you forget?
I don't know. I was thinking, I haven't seen Squid Game, but I know in Squid Game there's like a robot that turns around, and if people move, then you die or something. This one, as long as you're not moving the finger when he's looking at you, you're fine. But when you start moving the finger and he catches you, then you're in trouble. It's
Stop
real weird.
That egg.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Name your own price. Give it a shot. This is what where the game or the playdate really excels. Next up by Irish Jiminy is Baloo in the Big Blue. This is a roguelike Flappy Bird style game. So do what you will with that.
I just want to pause for a moment and encourage everybody to watch the Baloo in the Big Blue YouTube video that's on the Itch page. It's pretty choice. I'll just leave it at that.
I didn't watch this, but I am now, and it's pretty good.
Nice demo, whoever this dev is. Irish Jiminy?
Yeah. Irish Jiminy, yeah.
All right.
This is solid.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. Worth a trip to Itch. Do it, guys.
Name
what
your
else
own
you
price.
Got for us, Don?
Next up by Hugleton Instruments is POSG. This is a Playdate organic sound generator, and it's what... Did I miss one? It's what it sounds like. It's you experiment with different sounds on the Playdate. You throw balls around or you adjust the way rain sounds, beating against a train window. Oh, no, excuse me. The rain is separate. The train window, you adjust the horn and the speed of the train, get different sounds on the train. I have downloaded it, but not yet played, but it looks like just a fun little toy. It reminds me of Electroplankton.
I don't know anything about generating organic sounds on the Playnate, but I'm really surprised that anybody voluntarily made their name acronym start with POS. I'm just used to that meaning something else.
The name of the dev indicates they may not be English as a first language.
I guess that's a possibility too.
Which is fine.
All right.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's fine.
After our 10th awkward silence, what's next, Don?
Yeah, here we go. From Solitary Chestnut is Lana's Lab. And this one is an interesting looking matching puzzle. Yeah, jump in and take a look. I mean, it's not exactly a match three because you're adjusting a grid of four items, but you're sanitizing bacteria, it advertises, and this one is free. It's currently in development, but it launched with a pretty fleshed out page, and because it says in development with no, like, there's not really a metric of when this is done or anything, I was like, yeah, sure, we'll mention it now. So it looks fun. I have not played it yet. Downloaded, haven't played. And then jumping into catalog stuff, catalog games came out today. Hand of the Divine for $9 from Power Dive Games. It is a solitaire deck builder. And there is a demo on itch right now. Over 200 unique cards, online leaderboards, and relaxing yet compelling card-based gameplay. The idea of a deck builder, I hate the idea, but honestly, I love deck builders and I play a ton of them. They always sound so boring on paper, but then I start playing and I get addicted. So I'm afraid to try this because I'll get addicted, but it looks really good.
So I was trying to figure that one out. You hate them, but you enjoy them.
Doesn't it sound boring? Like, oh, let's play a card game on a video screen. It's like, really? Why wouldn't I play like an action game or something? But then, like, Slay the Spire was the one that finally cracked the code for me. And I was like, oh, yeah, these are actually really fun. And I don't have to, like, lay cards out everywhere and clean them all up and shuffle them.
No more pesky shuffling.
Yes.
Cool. All right. Well, that's Hand of the Divine. I don't know if you said it was $9, but that's what it is on catalog. Don, do you mind if I talk about this next one?
I'm kind of excited about
this. I just found out about this today. It's called Hill Slide. And this gives me like simultaneous Excite Bike / Whitewater Wipeout vibes. This is from Benzalo, and you are snowboarding down a mountain with multiple hills, and you're trying to outrun an avalanche, much like you're trying to outrun the wave in Whitewater Wipeout. But it looks like it has very similar mechanics to like an Excite Bike, where you're going up and down different ramps, in this case hills, and as you land, you've got to adjust your snowboard to land in the proper angle, just like you do on Excite Bike on the Nintendo. And also, like Whitewater Wipeout, it looks like you can increase your score by doing different tricks while you're in the air. So I don't know. This one's got Ryan written all over it. I can't wait to play this one. And it's only $2 on catalog.
If you can see the high scoreboard, you can see the dev is like 7 times higher than the second place score. So you got to take him down, Ryan.
Oh, man. Shouldn't you be, you know, restricted from competing on your own game?
He needs to wipe his board there.
I feel like there's a little, you know, taking the glass off scenario there and just running the pinball around the play field.
This one's been on itch for a while, but definitely up Ryan's alley. It's similar, if you're a listener, it's similar to Alto's Adventure, a popular mobile game.
This was on itch, huh?
Yeah, we mentioned that it was a Ryan game when it came out on itch, but that's okay.
Oh, Ryan. Man, again, I need to start listening.
It's okay.
During our recording.
There's a lot of games.
Yeah, there is.
There are.
Speaking of, what's
okay,
this
Ryan,
next one?
Are you listening?
Yeah. What?
Nick will remember us talking about this game in the past. But yes. Speaking of the Eclipse, Orrery, I hope I'm saying that right, by Ted Carter, is putting the solar system in your pocket. I have messed with this one. You can like rotate the solar system around and it shows the different days of the year or years where the planets will be and it's got some sort of astrology thing on it showing where the planets will be aligned to astrology. I don't know what that stuff means, but yeah, lots of cool stuff. It is really slick, and it was fun to just play around with. I don't know a whole lot about this stuff, but it's cool. You think you'll give it a
And
shot?
it's only a buck. I mean, that's got to be one of the cheapest catalog games. I mean, even a joke worth 99 cents was a couple bucks when it came out, wasn't
I think it was $2.
it? Very cool.
So
And
fun.
yeah, I really like these educational apps on the Playdate. I think it's a cool use of the platform. Don, remind me, wasn't this one of the first things available on Itch?
It was pretty early on, yeah. I think
I
that first
remember,
summer.
yeah, going through a bunch of educational apps one time. I think this was part of that, but it's cool to see it on catalog.
Yeah, it's a
Well, you
good fit
guys
and
will.
good timing.
Totally. Yeah. Well, you guys will have to tell me if this is another catalog release that I don't remember, but the next one is called Simple Mind, and it's made by Feedy. This one has me really excited because it is inspired by the classic board game Mastermind. So I love me some Mastermind, and the fact that this is now potentially available on the Playdate makes me very happy. It says there's four difficulty levels with board combinations and possibilities, duplicated tokens to find, an exclusive puzzle mode with procedurally generated situations where you must get the code in one single try. What in the world? I got to try this out. It's only $3 and it's available now on catalog. Simple Mind is what it's called.
If you look at the like geeky patterns, it shows a Death Star and a Pac-Man. I'm kind of into that.
That is cool.
This came out a few months ago on Itch, but I have not tried it yet. It does look fun. And then last up, a Chopter Copter, which I know is in on Itch, and I have downloaded, not played. I picked it up today. This one, you're going up a well, I guess, and you're chopping up monsters with a helicopter head. It looks gross and fun and
And it also looks like a vertical use of the screen. So I
yes.
think you've got to turn your playdate to the side to play this one, correct?
It looks like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Downloaded,
Very
haven't
interesting.
played. This is by Sad Folks Interactive, also dominating their scoreboard. So we need to put a stop to that. But I like
Come
the
on,
creepy
devs.
theme. And look at that. Look at that logo.
Yeah,
Very
that's fun.
metal. Yeah.
That's fun.
$4. And that's
Very
it.
cool. All right. Well, thank you for the indie inventory, Don. You know what that means. It's time for our boop, respectful boop pick of the week by Don. Don, what do you have for us this week?
I forgot it was my pick.
Well,
This
you're listening
week,
as well as I am this week.
this week is Four Track by Matt Sefton. It's advertised. It's golf in a tank. Swing into action and tee off on thousands of golf courses. So it's got easy, normal, hard, and expert. And the idea is you are a little tank and you shoot a golf ball. All 18 holes are on the Playdate screen at once. And sure enough, you shoot the ball and it'll hopefully go in a hole. Then you drive your little tank over to the hole and pick it up and then turn your turret around and shoot it to the next hole. And while you're driving around, you leave tank tracks all over the fairway. And the idea is to make it into all 18 holes as quickly as possible. Make it into all 18 holes, period. And as you combo, you get more points. Each hole, like if it's hole seven, it'll be worth 700 to 7,000 points or whatever. But different difficulties mean the size of the ball is a different size, the size of the cup is a different size. So it's really fun. It is not a serious golf game. I tried playing 2K Golf 23 this week, and it was incredibly difficult as someone who's played golf games my whole life. This was a very nice, chill, have it in your pocket. You can play a whole round. If you're good, you can play a whole round in less than 5 minutes. If you're really bad, you can play it in much shorter time. But the randomly generated courses mean you're never gonna be at a loss to find a course. So you can just keep playing and playing and playing. Anyway, what did you guys think of for track. Let's start with Bingo Podcast on the leaderboards here. Nick.
Yeah, I enjoyed this game.
It took a minute. That was true. You're really on the leaderboards?
Yeah.
Nicely done. You too, Don. I see you on there too. Man.
You got to hang out in our Discord a little bit, Ryan. Anyway, yeah. That's where we talk after we talk on the podcast.
Oh, I'm
you can buy the link in the show notes.
Oh, look who is. Oh, we are dominating this leaderboard. Look who's number one on expert mode. Gamma
on every
goat.
Mode.
Yes.
What?
Gamma,
what?
Gamma Goat what? Has completely dominated that game.
Wow.
So,
oh my gosh. I'm very impressed. And Dino and you both. What in the world is happening?
Everybody, this is amazing. Congratulations. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you for taking over this leaderboard with us. Very kind of you to do so all in this 2-week period. I like this game. I had a difficult time connecting with it at first because I tried it on normal mode. I did read the tutorial this time, but there were some parts that were a little unclear in normal mode. I dropped down to easy, and then it explained everything that I was missing quite a bit. So that is a good move if you're just starting the game, I think. But the real fun is in expert mode, I thought. I didn't get quite as much satisfaction in normal mode as an expert. And aside from, weather conditions and wind, are there other differences? The hole size, I think, is smaller.
Hole size and the ball size, yeah.
And then also have some more obstacles like water and sand in the expert modes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yep. So... Yeah, it was good. I played through a couple of different courses. I ran into a couple of issues, which I noted in the Discord, but those didn't halt my enjoyment. They were just more of a curiosity for me because the game still continued to function, and I thought it was just my poor playing ability. But yeah, it's a fun twist take on golf, and it's really easy to pick up and play. I love that the entire course is laid out on one screen. I think that's very clever, and I enjoyed the music and thought most of the graphics were easy to distinguish. But it did take me a minute to figure out exactly what was happening when I started on normal mode. But yeah, so my suggestion, drop down to easy for at least the first round until you've got kind of the idea of what you're supposed to be doing, and then bump it up from there.
That's a good idea. I did the same thing. I started harder. Well, I started on normal. And then when I played on easy, I hadn't played easy until recording this, and I thought it was broken because it shows you the scoreboard between every hole.
Yeah.
And so I messaged the dev and was like, hey, mine has a bug in it. It keeps showing me the scoreboard. But anyway, Ryan, what did you think?
Yeah. I like a lot of the things you mentioned liking about it, Don, that you've got a whole golf course in your pocket. And I'm not a big golfer in reality, but I enjoy a video game golf game. This one I really like when you hop into it. It has these like extraordinarily concise bullet point instructions for how to play the game. I thought that was really fun. It was like, bullet point one, you are a tank. Bullet point two, make it in the golf hole or something. Like yeah. It was very well written, like so quick and fast to get caught up to how this game functions. Nick, when I stop yapping here, I'm going to be real interested to hear what threw you for a loop on that entry mode. But I really like the mechanics. I thought it was really easy to pick up and play. I think one of the scoring mechanics that has not been mentioned so far, you know, Don mentioned combos and speed and all this, but I think that you also get higher points if you are able to sink that ball into sequential holes. So starting with one, moving to two, moving to three, because you've got 18 holes scattered around your screen, so you can choose any one of them. I guess my main moan about this game is that while I appreciate an entire golf course being jammed onto a playdate screen, I had difficulties with the size of my tank. The size of the tank is very small, and consequently, the size of the turret is even smaller. And with that being the thing that you aim, I wanted to have a greater visibility on that. Not only did I not have a great visibility on the very small turret on the very small tank, but there were literally times when I would adjust the turret angle by a literal pixel and I was unable to hit the hole I was trying for. I would try multiple times over, one pixel this way, one pixel that way, etc. And I'd go on the left of the hole, right of the hole, left of the hole, right of the hole, and it would never be able to hit the hole. For example, if I were trying to shoot for holes in a sequential order and the next one was quite far away, it did not have the range and angle to actually hit that hole. It's like you could adjust it by a degree or two, but if you needed a half degree to hit that hole, then it's like you were out of luck. So I didn't like the fact that one of these gaming mechanics, being able to hit holes sequentially in order to raise your score even further, was occasionally impossible. I want to be able to hit the holes that I'm supposed to hit. And I understand you can hit holes not in order too. That's all right. But if that's a mechanic, a scoring mechanic, I want to be able to exploit that potentially. So that was kind of a gripe for me.
If it's a half degree, you have to move your tank. There are right. some times where you got to move your tank.
Okay. You're probably
It's not super rigid. It doesn't happen very often, but you're right. There is like a degree of movement or whatever it is. I would kind of like if the crank was super fine tuning and mm-hmm. it isn't quite.
Yeah, that was my hope. And your suggestion to move the tank makes a lot of sense because you've got this like radius in which you can move. And mm-hmm. so, you know, now I can understand how that would help a lot. So maybe I'll have to try it again. I always felt like I wanted to cut down my variables, like position of the tank, position of the turret.
Yeah, I get
just kind of working with one. But that makes a lot of sense that moving the tank would allow you to hit that previously unhittable hole.
Once you move your wheels, it feels like you're starting over.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Ryan, the easy mode way to aim, I think, is that if you notice, it's pretty light, but the whole course is a grid.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole thing has a grid drawn on it. And also uh-huh. your tanks draw heavier lines. So I would almost always try to like line myself horizontally or vertically under or next to a hole.
Same.
So I was always Same. Shooting horizontally or vertically. And until I got really the hang of it, I would kind of forget about doing it in order and just try and aim and get it in the hole.
Cheaters.
By shooting up and down or left and right. But you were talking about the scoring if you get it in order, and that's because the chain builds as you go in order. So if you get a one combo on hole one, that's your lowest chain. But if you try and get a one combo on hole 18, then you're kind of wasting how powerful hole 18 is, because hole 18 is worth the most. It's worth 1800 points, let's say, or 18,000 points.
Oh, okay.
So if your highest combo is 18 multiplier, into hole 18, then you'll get the most points for it. And if you've been doing that the whole time without missing anything, you have a massive combo going into it.
Okay. I guess I need to read all the words.
Easy mode really, really spells that out because it shows you the scoreboard after every hole. And so you really see, I missed this hole, so I lost these points. And I chained this, I missed this chain, or I got this chain, I gained these points.
You know, that's really good advice that Nick already said, and I totally listened to what you said, Nick, is that try easy mode. I don't know that I ever did. I think I never played an easy mode game.
It's worth dipping into.
Yeah. Maybe those are the words I did not read.
Something that's very hard about easy mode, in my opinion, is that I think you only get 5 balls on easy mode. Whereas hard mode, I think you get 8 balls.
Mm. Yeah, I noticed that there was a fluctuation of the amount of balls you get. I think maybe from normal to hard, but anyway.
Or expert mode, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, I agree with Nick. I found expert mode sort of like my favorite mode. It just felt right.
Mm-hmm.
The size of the ball made more sense. The number of balls I had made more sense. I love that when you shoot the ball off course on any of them, it makes that like window shattering sound, which is really cute. And I hated the music at first. I was like, oh man, this is going to get old. But then this week I noticed that I was like getting into it and it really fit the mood. It almost had like an Animal Crossing vibe to it, like a little whimsical sound. And I kind of enjoyed it. So I really came around on the music. I wanted to ask you guys, did you notice if there's any indication of the wind? Sometimes the wind is really bad and I can't tell. How do you know?
Yeah, there's a little flag on your tank, I think, that blows around and shows the wind moving in a particular direction. Pretty sure.
You're right. Yeah.
Something about it. Yeah. Again, a very small tank. And a very small flag with a very small turret. That was my main gripe about this game. Otherwise, it was really enjoyable just to kind of kick back and have a little 5-minute game of golf.
Thank you for that tip.
Yeah.
The course I'm on right now, the ball's like curving when I shoot it. And sure enough, my little flag is like pinned to the top left corner.
Yep.
Okay, cool. I don't feel like the tank is too small. I feel like having the cannon be black against a mostly white background and a white tank reads really well. It is a lot of information in a tiny screen. This would be easier on the Switch or something. More legible on a bigger screen.
Yeah, I didn't have trouble finding the tank. Even my ancient eyes saw that. But my main gripe was that lack of total 360 on that 360 lack of partial degrees, lack of ability to aim in partial degrees with my tank. I think those are the words I was trying to get to come out of my mouth.
Gotcha.
Think of it like a machine, Ryan. You may not have a full analog control of every degree of movement of the turret. You know, you start cranking that crank to wind the gears to make that turret move, and it's going to overcorrect a little bit each time.
Yeah, what Nick said.
Okay, I'll start thinking about that.
Did you guys shoot long balls very often where you have to hold the button down and it draws the path?
I felt incredible when one of those went in.
Totally.
You know, the thing that I was curious about, and I don't know if this is accurate to the experience or if I did something wrong, but when you hold the button down to fire, there's not exactly an indication of how far that it goes, or the indication only shows for like a fraction of a second or something. Mm-hmm. It makes the distance shots really challenging.
Yeah, it's very fast, but I think as long as you're holding down, the ball is going up, and as soon as you let go, the ball starts descending toward the course.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as long as you're holding it up, it's going to continue going.
Yeah. Something I love in like the Tiger Woods games are the training modes where you're shooting at bullseyes and you're trying to chip in and Close chip is 50 points, a further one is 300 points or whatever. I feel like this could take advantage of something like that. If you had like a laser sight on your tank and there's a training mode where you're getting used to the cannon is looks like this, it's aiming this way and the laser is pointed to this hole, so this is what I can expect out of this type of shot. Mm-hmm. And if you had a meter, sort of like Nick was saying, the old school NES style games where you push the button, the three tap, or even holding the button and the little bar fills up. And in a training mode, okay, this is what you can expect from holding it for half a second or two beats or whatever. And this is the distance you'll get. If it had that type of training mode, and then you take all that away in the real modes, it still trains you to expect and get better at the game. I think that'd be really fun.
Yes, agreed. I, as usual, Don has great ideas. And the other thing that that could help with, you know, your like laser sight you were talking about in training mode would be to demonstrate, okay, you can shoot in this degree or mm-hmm. that degree, but you can't shoot in fractional degrees. And so like that would better teach you, okay, you got to move your tank around, Ryan, and then maybe you can hit those fractional degree spaces. Yeah, I really like that idea, Don.
The fractional thing is really exaggerated if you're shooting a long distance.
Yes, that's where I had difficulty with it. Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's go to the Discord real quick. We mostly got people just comparing scores, which is fine. We didn't get a whole lot of... actually, Dino just dropped his comment in. But Gamma Goat on our Discord just really took to the game. I think he's just sat with it, and he just figured out if you just pound out course after course and just complete them, you're going to do pretty well. It feels like most people are just not completing the courses, and he was just doing his best to get them in order. So Gamma Goat did end up on the top of every leaderboard.
That's incredible.
Per four track. And then Dino ended up right behind him, number two on the expert mode.
Yep.
Which is great.
HPP representing. Look at that. Occupying almost half of the spots. Is there a fifth member on the top of the expert board?
I don't know.
I don't recognize anyone besides Gamma Goat, Dino, you, and Nick.
The PDFRF guy is in the squad Discord. I know that.
Okay.
And Nez looks familiar too.
I don't know if that means we can claim him.
I don't think they're in our
Discord. Portable document format radio frequency.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was pretty fun to see Gamma Goat just stomp everything, man, and leave it there.
Very impressive.
So that was really cool. Oh, and he also said Gamma Goat noticed that if you don't move your tank between holes, that's where you get a bonus.
What?
Oh my gosh, that would be so hard.
how do you not move your tank between holes?
Not between holes. You grab the ball. You shoot it without moving your tank to take a second shot, I guess. Well, that would be the same as comboing, though, right? He says it right here. Your last shot, restart before G nudge. If you don't move after restart, you likely get 0 points. If you move the tank, it does seem to reset. Oh, I'm sorry. He was looking at a bug. It does show you a combo of plus 100 points. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong thing here. Am I the dumbass? Yeah, maybe I'm the dumbass. Well, anyway, sorry. If I'm the dumbass, there'll be a correction from Scenic Route, I'm sure. Or from that, Sefton. Dino said, completing a course on expert setting without dropping a shot put me in second on the leaderboard. This was primarily due to a favorable course layout more than skill. So that's the other thing. You can just keep hitting the B button on the main menu, and it'll keep regenerating new courses. And then if you find one you think you like, then you push A to start.
So I have a quick question for you, Don and Nick. I think it was Nick and I who were talking at some point and trying to figure out, are the courses procedurally generated or are there 1,000 courses designed by Matt Sefton? Because it doesn't say procedurally generated on the catalog page. It says there's, I don't know, 1,000 or over 1,000 courses or something. But the words procedurally generated courses are never written. So have you been in touch with Matt Sefton to better understand that?
No, it says thousands of courses. And I think if they were handcrafted, it would say thousands of handcrafted courses.
Okay.
They gotta be, I mean, they have seeds, so
I mean, I would think that they are procedurally generated, but then in our everyday conversations, I think Nick gave me an actually, and I was like, well, maybe Nick's right about that.
They have seeds.
I don't remember.
Course 25319 is like this one. 27443 when I hit it. I don't think he generated 27,000 handcrafted courses.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, we'll see you again in 6 weeks for the next Matt Sefton pick from Dawn.
Oh, Lord. I know my next one. It's not a Matt Sefton game.
In the meantime, I think that means we're on to a preview of next episode's pick of the week, right?
Yeah. And that belongs to Nick.
Yeah, the next pick of the week is called Under the Tree, and it is by Yamabushi Softworks LLC.
Who is that by?
Yamabushi Softworks LLC. And this game is a first-person dungeon crawler inspired by wizardry. So, very up my alley.
Looks really cute. Looks like there's a lot of variety to it. Is this come before or after Under the Castle and the Under the series?
Under the series, yeah. My next pick is going to be Under the Playdate somewhere. I don't know. Yeah, it's that'd be neat if there was a whole series of Under the games. But
yeah, you know, that's the Under the Series games is giving the Cranky games a run for their money. We got Cranky Bird, Cranky Crow, Cranky Dog, Cranky co-hosts, all sorts of crankiness.
I'm looking to see. Oh, Ryan, just so you know, there is an FAQ that has a little bit of tips and tricks in it.
For see, Under the Tree or?
For Under the Tree, or, just okay. So you don't end up on a 5-hour flight trying to find a key or something.
Oh, yeah.
That's usually where I do my best play dating.
That's on the catalog page?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Linked from it anyhow. Yeah.
This game is $12. So it's another one that's up there.
Up there in terms of quality too, though.
Looks great. So I'm excited to start playing.
Cool. So great. Looking forward to it. Well, thanks for the next pick, Nick. I'm looking forward to checking that out with our crew, not only the crew on air, but also in the Discord. And I think that's going to wrap it for this episode. So if you want to tell us what you're thinking about these episodes, you can always contact, I guess it's Dawn, helloplaydatepodcast@gmail.com. We've got a Discord that evidently I don't know how to get on. Need to do that. What else happens? We have a website, playdatepodcast.com, that gets you straight to our podcast. We have an Instagram at @HelloPlaydate. What am I missing? Oh, we haven't mentioned the bingos line in a while. You can give us a call and pray that Dawn edits in your voice to our podcast at 724-BINGOS1. That's 724-246-4671. I would love to hear from you. I don't know about Dawn. But until then, it's been great chatting with you. And do we don't have an outro line yet, do we? Episode 50.
Yet. Only when you edit is there an outro music.
All right. Well, I guess this is where we say bye. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.